Conference, but we recognize the potential of the tourism industry in the economy of our country, and therefore welcome the opportunity that we have before we close work for this task. This is our last day today. So we pushed in two meetings, but this one has been scheduled for some time. And we want you to know, CEO, that we appreciate that you have sent us your presentation well in advance. We always note that with appreciation, because it gives us sufficient time to go through the presentation. We are experiencing a unique challenge in our select committee, which is that we invite you all the way from Pretoria to come here, and when you're here, we have to rush through things, and we're trying to find a balance. So what I will propose is, because we've had the presentation, that you speak to it. You don't need to go word for word through it, and then give us sufficient time as members to engage with your presentation. And the time that we would allocate for ourselves is now on my Timex. Very few people still know the Timex watches, but my Timex watch is 10. So if we give you, say, until 11:15 for the presentation, which is 1 hour 15 minutes, if you take shorter, that's fine. And then we will take 45 minutes of that for the engagement with you. So, welcoming you, we would want to then go to the second item, which is just to say, members, we have apologies from written apologies. The standing apology for the Honorable Bauda, who is still recovering. We have an apology from Honorable Ntebe, from Honorable Timune, from Honorable Lont, as well as Honorable Faba. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4 apologies that we have. We note those 4 apologies that we've received in writing. We are still expecting Honorable Mtetwa to join us. Then, in terms of the rest of the business of the day, we will, before we disperse, request your permission that we look at the minutes of our last meeting, and we'd also want to test with you whether we can adopt the report on the international study tour. And then finally, we just want to update you, and I'm looking at Hanif, on the plans that we have made for the oversight in the Western Cape that's going to happen in August. So those are the items for our agenda. It looks like many items, but we'll take not more than 1 minute on each of the items. I have here as well an indication that the Deputy Minister, Ms. Elizabeth Tabete, is on her way to the meeting. V26 is a bit far for many people. So the Deputy Minister is on her way to the meeting. But we have the Chief Executive Officer, the Chief Financial Officer, as well as the Budget Manager of SA Tourism. We also have the Deputy Chairperson of the Board, Mr. Igalafeng, who walks with a blanket. And then we have the support staff from the National Department of Tourism, as well as the DDG of Sector Support Services in the National Department of Tourism. Mr. Nchona, give over to you immediately to lead your team you can delegate who you want to at whatever time. I think it's just proper that we just welcome Deputy Minister. We have noted that tourist sites are much more friendly than getting to room V226. Welcome, Deputy Minister. We appreciate your presence. Mr. Shona. I don't know. Normally you have the political saying something first. And, okay. I didn't want to pounce on her as she walks in. But you decide.
Yeah.
Hold on for us for a second, please, dear.
Honorable Chabango. I'm just asking us why do we not follow the same procedure as usual, or is it very, very cold of introducing members?
No. We introduce members earlier or at the beginning of the meeting. But because the Deputy Minister was not here, I thought let's do the introduction when she's here. So let's do it once we have received the presentation. Then we'll introduce members. If you feel strongly that you want the Minister to know you here, let's do it now. Let's start with you. I rule that we do it now. I'm Eddie Makue, and I serve the province of Gauteng.
Good morning, honourable members, Deputy Minister, and South African Tourism. My name is Mandla Khai, member of the NCOP, representing the Eastern Cape. Thank you. Good morning, members. My name is Vusi Magwebu, from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Makosini Shabangwa. I come from Free State. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody, and the Deputy Minister. I am Masifa Godihale from Limpopo Province.
Thank you very much. And we have our Secretary to the Select Committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rebecca Mtilini. I'm the Committee Secretary.
Good morning, Abdullah Hanif, researcher.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Our apologies, just to come few minutes. We were told that the venue has changed to M314. So we started there, but we saw nobody. And then we had to check, it's on a still V226. Then we had to come back from Max Building and then here. Not that we are disrespecting you. I think today we are here with the South African Tourism, our only entity in the Department of Tourism, and I'm sure they are here to give you the APP, and as such then we are here because they report to us as the Department of Tourism, and as you know, the bulk of work on the marketing is done by them. So the department will do a little bit, but not too much. They do mostly then marketing our tourism products locally and internationally. And as you know, that 53% of our budget goes to them because they are doing this critical job for us. And hence then we are here then to be part of the meeting and be able to hear what are the issues that the members will be raising and then can we be able to deal with them or not. The delegation is led by the CEO, Mr. Sisanchona. I'm sure he's going to do the opening remarks or whatever. I'm not sure how they do it. Also have the deputy chairperson of the board sitting next to me, Ms. Tebe Ikalafe. And then we've got about the budget manager sitting right on my right, Temba Lovu. And then the CFO, Tom Bauer there. And then from the department we have the DDG, Moroma Rampele is dealing with quite a lot of these issues that SAT deals with. We just restructured the portfolio. Your portfolio is quite a lot of things that you can, you know, it is like that long name of the parliamentary, that what children, email, whatever thing. So he's dealing with a lot of tourism aspects, youth, whatever, but they fall onto her as the DDG responsible. And aside then she's here. Then we've got other officials, I think, who are with us from the department, and they're going to be part of us. I won't go through all of them, I think, but they're here as part of a team to be here this morning. I think for us, it's just, I think, to do that, but we hope that with the mandate that we are given, and SAT as a vehicle that is assisting us in terms of reaching out to a lot where we cannot, as a department, do. That's why then we have to complement each other and make sure that we have to be here when they present to you the AP, because it should be linked as to what we do as a department, and then making sure that we can implement our mandate largely. That is what they're responsible for. So they are like our firstborn and the lastborn child, because that is the only entity that reports to us and make sure that we can be able to live to our mandate. I think with those few words, I think I'll hand over. I'm not sure whether to the CEO or to the chair, to the deputy chair, then they'll be able to do their remarks. But I'm quite happy that I'm here as part of the delegation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair. And I'm surprised nobody else brought a blanket today. So I know you're commenting about my blanket, but everyone should be wearing a blanket today. It's cold. I'm a Kazazeka, but I can't deal. We freeze our cold in gold in Joburg, so that's different. We are very delighted to be here, and we thank you so much for the opportunity. So we have a very comprehensive presentation, which you've acknowledged to have received in time, and we're pleased that you've had the opportunity to go through it. We are going to cover a few areas, and I probably just want to highlight a couple of items out of the presentations which the CEO will go into detail with. As you recall, we had a ministerial review with the previous minister, and following out of that ministerial review, we had a review and a re-look at our strategy going forward. And coming out of that, we refined and developed our 5 in 5 strategy to be able to get 5 million tourists in 5 years. And that 5 in 5 is also built on 5 strategic thrusts. So the same will go into those, but I guess key or two of the principal thrusts of that strategy is our marketing investment framework in terms of how we are going to support our vision to get 5 million more tourists in 5 years. And second to that also is our organizational design, how we're going to restructure the agency of South African Tourism to be able to deliver on our goals. So that's what we're going to talk about today. I think for those who had opportunity to go to the recent Indaba, you will know we rebranded it from just the Indaba to Africa's Travel Indaba to really recognize that it is the preeminent show for travel and tourism across the continent. And we had and as you know, from a participation, we have a lot of countries from around the continent who come to South Africa, and South Africa is a thoroughfare to the rest of the continent. So we're gonna, and at that tourism in Daba, at Africa Travel in Daba, you know, we launched our I Do Tourism campaign, which is really about how to get everybody involved in the value chain of tourism, because every single one of us helps to deliver tourism. And as we know, tourism is a key, as you acknowledge as well, tourism is a key vehicle to drive the economy. So the CEO will go into the details of the I Do Tourism, which was launched by the President at the recent Africa Travel Endeavor. And finally, the CEO will probably also talk to our efforts in this past year to really enhance our engagement with the provinces. And our 5 in 5, the key in our 5 in 5 strategy is how we integrate with the provinces and ensure that the provinces are a key part of delivering on our strategy. So with those few words, I will hand over through you, Chair, to the CEO to really go into the highlights of the presentation which you've been presented, assuming, as you have acknowledged, that every member here
spent last night working through the details, and today they're not going to ask where the commas and the full stops are, but rather are going to ask how can we support you to deliver this mandate. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, good morning, Deputy Minister, Deputy Chair, and everyone around the room. Thank you very much for the contextualization and introduction as well. I'm not going to, again, go through line by line, and I think the value for us is rather the questions that we're going to get back and see how we can work through them. So I'll be definitely be less than an hour, probably about 45 minutes or so, and then we can pick it up from there. So as the slides flip through, I will not necessarily be on them slide by slide, but I'll be informing content basically as we go through on that side. So I'm going to skip the first couple of slides because it talks about conceptualization of the organization, our mandate, and everything else. So I think we can maybe jump five slides or something like that, go through. Right? It talks about our mission and vision, and I think already that's been contextualized. Right? I think key to bring through as we look into the business, I'm going to start just from a macro perspective because SA Tourism does not operate in a vacuum, but rather, you know, within a global context. The key thing that I want to highlight, basically, as per UNWTO statistics, there are 1.2 billion international travelers, basically, at the moment. That is a global market share. This market has been growing at 4% year on year over the last 10 years or so. Then you have to ask ourselves the question then in terms of what are the characteristics that are starting to come through on that side. Just some key important things that China is the world's largest source market at the moment. Everyone's got a China strategy. Our competitors has got a China strategy in terms of getting the Chinese market to travel to the organizations as well. So that's been quite a big phenomenon basically from that perspective. But it's also too important to understand some of the geopolitics that we see around the world. The turmoil in the Middle East is an example, you know, where you've got Turkey being a big source market and a destination market rather than a competitor. And right next door is Syria, you know, and the impact of that now is, as an example, diverted tourists away from Turkey and are now looking for other places to go to. Just to give you a big example, Germany is a big source market for us. There's something like 5 million Germans who holiday in Turkey every year. That 5 million stopped going to Turkey, right? They now need to go somewhere else. And we want to position South Africa as that destination that they can be able to receive them from that perspective. So the world is shifting. There's a lot of things basically happening around the geopolitical space. We all know recently about what has happened to Qatar as an example, you know, where literally the neighbors have closed off from Qatar. That has an impact. That has an impact. So as much as we sit, you know, 18 months ahead of time and plan for the next year, we've got to be nimble and flexible enough to be able to shift our resource allocation based on what's happening around the world from that perspective. We all know what's happening around the U.S. as well, basically, where, again, that market, the tourism arrivals has actually decreased as a result of some of the legislation that's been put through and some of the attitudes that are starting to permeate through. Then lastly, there's always this issue which we've seen around the U.K., and also in France around terrorism, you know. So safety and security is something that is top of mind, you know, for the international traveler as we look for them in that perspective, basically, in that regard. Now that I've just kind of sketched the world, let me just go into South Africa itself. You know, it's been published a lot that 2016 was our bumper year. We've never seen so many international arrivals ever at 10.2 million. You speak to the trade, you know, from hotels, from tour operators, and you see happy faces because with this traffic, they start to see themselves actually up and coming in that regard. We have come off a low base as well because 2015 was quite difficult due to Ebola crisis and also, you know, unclarity basically around our visa regime. But if you look at our performance 2016 to 2015, it was a 13% uplift. But if you even that out over 3 years, you probably see something like a 3% growth rate, basically, over the last 3 years, because we've got to take those dips into account. So it's important to know that whilst it's double-digit growth, a lot of it is about recovery as opposed to the actual hardcore growth from that side. I think just to highlight what's been good for us is the markets around the world, such as South America, 34% year-on-year growth. And that's driven, basically, Temba? and that's driven basically by from a low base. I think there's something like 67,000 arrivals from that market, but it's growing from that perspective. Key to note here, 70% of our international arrivals is from the continent of Africa. That becomes important to understand. So as much as we talk about the rest of the world and everything happening around there, basically, that market, source market, becomes important for us. There is a measure that we use called cost of acquisition. So we look at how much we spend in terms of resources of marketing in each country. We look at the number of people that visit South Africa from the country, and we divide the cost by the two. So it gives us a sense that for everyone coming through the door, I mean the gate, from that country, it costs us X amount to recruit. The information is not here, but I just thought it'd be anecdotal. I think the cheapest market is about 24 rands per tourist that costs us to bring in. Then the most expensive is something like 855 rands. You know, so it's quite a wide range. So the cheapest market, as an example, is Zimbabwe, and also Lesotho, 24 rands per tourist. Mm-hmm. The most expensive one is Australia and China, at about 850 rand. Now, that in itself just kind of gives you a sense, where should we put our efforts in? But at the same time, you would look at average spend. So therefore, how much does each tourist from Zimbabwe spend versus each tourist from Australia spend? You'd be quite surprised. We would think maybe the Australians spend more, but there's quite an even keel there. And in there, it moves anything from 50 rand a day per tourist to something like 1,800 rand per day per tourist. So I'm trying to give you a sense. These all are inputs that inform in terms of how we make investment choices from around the world. You see green figures on this table. We just looked at year-on-year growth. The only blip that we have over there is Australasia, flat. Not 0.1 minus 0.1. But all the others are good indicators showing the growth that is starting to drive from there. But again, as I said, out of our 10.2 million that we speak about, 7.4 million arrivals from the continent. That we must never forget, basically, from that regard. Now, I'm going to talk, now that I've covered the world, let me talk about domestic tourism. Here's the thing that is important, is that if you look at most tourism sectors, economies around the world, they've got a very strong domestic base, overlaid by international one. South Africa is the other way around, where we've got a very weak domestic base, but a much stronger international one, right? And we've got to be very careful and be very deliberate as to how we balance our portfolio. Because if you're too reliant on international market, if the world decides that all of Africa has Ebola, they stop traveling to the country. And that leaves a huge gap, basically, that we see within the economy. So therefore it becomes important that we balance the domestic and international. The second part, which is a real-life example currently at the moment, the fires in Eisner, as an example. There's a lot of international cancellations, right, as a result of that one. And we are trying to tell the world that actually Eisner is open for business again, that the core city itself is still intact. There's still accommodation available, but cancellations have been made. So we try to fill this void now with domestic travel. And domestic travel, it's got to have context. The first one is that, you know, hardly 30, 35 years ago, you know, the majority of the population in this country needed pass laws just to move from one city to the next. So mobility is not something that's ingrained within. The second part becomes confidence, traveling in numbers. You know, how do you make sure that we start to create that perspective from that regard? That said, however, we saw a decrease of domestic tourism from 2015 to 2016, 1% downtick. You know, so there were fewer trips being taken. And you can put a whole host of things around this one, right? We can look at the economic climate that South Africa is in. We can look at the level of unemployment that we're in. We can look at the currency issues, a whole host of issues. Because essentially, tourism or travel, we have what you call, we compete for share of wallet, right? So the average person's got 100 rands in their pocket. They can have a choice to either buy consumables, food, whatever it is, or to buy consumer products. They could buy a TV, they could buy a fridge, or whatever it is, versus to traveling, right? Which is basically something that is, we call it, it's instantly consumed, because after the weekend you've traveled, you've got nothing physical, tangible to hold for it, except basically for the experience that the one has had. Whilst if you bought a TV, there's a TV that's going to be still around. So we compete for share of wallet, basically, from that side. I'll be, though, that, you know, there are fewer trips being taken. the key issue to realize is that the trips themselves were longer than previously before. So whilst previously you found people staying every 3-4 days, they're now staying 5-6 days. So we saw a bit of an uptick from that side. The other phenomenon, which I'll bring through a bit later, is that when we speak to trade, when you speak to accommodation holders, when you speak to the industry itself, and then you ask them, can we start to have a focus on domestic? The general, and I'm being general, the general attitude here is that I want to maximize revenues as a business person, and I'd rather be chasing the pound, the dollar, and the euro, right? So therefore, there isn't a focus as far as industry is concerned, basically, on domestic tourism. I think that's the first one. The second one is that even during off-peak, we say to the guys, well, why don't you focus on domestic off-peak? They'd rather do maintenance and stuff like that. So instead, over time, we've been trying to force existing players to start to divert their attention towards domestic. We're now looking at it slightly differently, where as part of our inclusive growth strategy, as we grow the space, we want to introduce new players in who come up with specific and deliberate domestic tourism products, budget accommodation, and also experiences, basically, from that perspective. You've all heard of the 700-plus properties or establishments that are owned by the provincial authorities. We want to start to bring them on stream to add more capacity that is deliberately and targeted, basically, at domestic travel from that perspective. Secondly, as well, we want to introduce, as part of our transformation agenda, deliberate what we call DMCs, destination marketing companies. These are the companies that start to package and say, come to Mpumalanga for the weekend, it's going to cost you $5.99. But in the package, they've included accommodation, travel, basically, and activities. So we need to develop more of those to start focusing. Again, the focus previously was about how do you take existing players to show them they should focus on this one and say, no, let's bring new players in to start to kind of come through on that side, basically. Next one, then. And then I'll highlight some of the issues around that side. The other one becomes around the business events. We tend to talk of tourism and we think leisure, and we forget business events or business tourism. And this is the space that talks about conventions, conferences, incentives, basically, and events. Very, very important, because this is what we call bulk acquiring of tourists. You know, the largest one that we've had so far to date has been the World's AIDS Conference. 22,000 delegates embarked onto Durban, and you can imagine the trickle-down effect. Everything from food to consumables to everything else that really took over that city, and the economic impact that starts to be left behind becomes a good catalyst, basically, from that perspective. Part of the strategy is to start to move. How do we start to spread this what we call business events or business tourism benefits? So when, you know, smaller towns can't handle 22,000, but they can handle 500, they can handle 300. So we're specifically starting to drive focus, basically, to make sure that this tourism benefit start to spread, basically, from that side. Just to give you some numbers, on average, the business tourist spends 3 times more than the leisure tourist per day. You know, so they're actually quite valuable from that perspective. We are the 38th most competitive convention destination around the world. We are in the top 15 long haul, right? Because essentially South Africa is long haul when you look at source markets around the world, whether it be Europe, Americas, basically, or Asia in that regard. But we are number one in Africa and Middle East as a destination source for meetings incentives. However, the continent is waking up. Rwanda is coming up behind our backs as they are setting themselves up as basically the convention bureau, and also the Middle East, you know, the Dubais of this world are starting to turn the wicker up from that side. So business events is part and parcel of our strategy, of the delivery numbers that we are looking at, and we want to go more and deeper, basically, on that one. The other side that I want to bring to attention is grading, you know. We are widening the scope, not just to look at grading establishments, 1-star, 2-star, 5-star, 6-star, because that's a capability within SA Tourism. We've got the Chief Quality Assurance Officer. He or she is the person that actually signs the certificates and determines whether they're 1-star or 5-star. We want to widen the scope to what we call quality assurance, and quality right across the board, because we go around the world, we go across this country, marketing South Africa as a destination. So we make promises as to what the experience will be. We therefore have to make sure that the experience promise is experience felt when the tourist hits the ground, basically. So that you can walk into an establishment knowing that it's three-star graded and you know what to expect. Because if what is felt is different from what is promised, it actually has a negative impact as to how we look across a border in that regard. This space has also been getting a bit of a competition, if I can put it that way, because technology is starting to come over. You know, the likes of the trip advisors are coming on board. Then you ask yourself, what determines the decision or criteria that a traveler goes through? Do you now look at the star grading, as officially been done by AC Tourism, or do you look at, you know, technology that is starting to look at things like a TripAdvisor and comments from, etc. The basic overline is that although technology, yes, is starting to add on to the space, the grading itself is still a huge driver around the comfort and the confidence that we give to the tourists who come through. So it's within the space that we start to look at grading, start to look at quality assurance across the board to make sure that we can deliver as a country consistently and we also know as a value destination. There's something like 5,300 establishments that have been graded in South Africa. We want to grow that. We want to bring more entities to be graded, basically, from that side. Right. Go forward. It's important just to, and then I'll head on to my CFO at the end, just to give you a sense in terms of what the funding mix of SA Tourism is. The Deputy Minister alluded that we are their only child. We are the firstborn and the lastborn. So very happy to hear that we're not a stepchild, so therefore... So we get a lot of love and attention from the ministry, and rightfully so. The other one is that the Deputy Minister also said that 53% of the NDT's budget gets allocated to SA Tourism. The mix for us is that 53% makes 90%, basically, of our budgeting or funding as an entity. The other balance of about 10% comes from what we call TOMSA levies. And TOMSA levies are voluntary levies that are collected by the industry, usually 1% basically of the total bill. So the next time you see when you pay your bill at a hotel, they usually charge 1%. And this 1% is a levy that gets accrued, collected, and is actually helping to fund SA Tourism. So we really want to open the door around industry participation as we go through and drive our agenda basically in that regard. Okay. Now, it becomes important that we had to look at South African tourism and say to ourselves, as part of our medium-term or five-year plan, what is it that we want to achieve? And we had to be very clear and very deliberate around coming up with a plan that says we want to grow our arrivals, our tourism space, by 40% over the next 5 years. So we want to grow the space 40% in the next 5 years. That's a tall ask. It's a very, very tall ask within the space. Because, as I've said previously, you've got 1.2 international arrivals, 1.2 billion international arrivals. Our record year is 10.2 million. So we're not even getting 1% of global market share. We want to do more. We want to create more space to bring that market share. So we want to grow 40%, basically, in the space over the next 5 years. That includes both international arrivals at 4 million and also domestic tourism at 1 million itself. So it becomes a 5-in-5 strategy. And if there's anything that I'd like to leave behind with this select committee, it's 5-in-5. 5-in-5 drives everything that we do within SA Tourism. We test everything that comes through the door. We test all of our plans against this 5-in-5. 5-in-5 simply puts, we want to grow by an extra 5 million in the next 5 years. So at the moment, as I said, we are at 10.2 million. So in 5 years' time, we're going to be at 14.2 million international arrivals. And for domestic, from 2.7, literally to 3.7 million holiday trips been taken. So when we took this view around the 5-in-5, we had to be very clear. So where are we going to get this extra growth from? Where are we going to get this extra uplift from? And we went through a very deliberate and open exercise, which we call Marketing Investment Framework, MIF. And I won't go into too much into acronyms, but there are more than 250 countries around the world. We had to be very clear as to which countries are we going to invest in that is going to give us the right level of performance in order to reach these targets. We looked at the entire world. We segmented basically the countries based on a couple of things, GDP per capita, the level of connectivity between South Africa and that entity. So as an example, if there were less, if it did not require visas between South Africa and that country, it got a higher rating. If there was direct airlift between, it got a higher rating. And we got through to 35 markets. And these 35 markets become core markets for us. They give us a mix between the cost of acquisition, as I've said, and also the revenue projections that we have on that side. We also realized that we've got to be smart in terms of how we start to look at this space, because the key thing there was there are over 250 countries around the world. We are only present in 35. So how do we start to extend our reach basically beyond that? And the key thing that we did over there was to bring Derco into the room. We've got a formal agreement between SA Tourism and Derco, and where we don't have presence as SA Tourism, we have presence through Derco offices. There are 130 embassies around the world, and in those 130 embassies, tourism becomes part and parcel, basically, of the activities and agenda within that space. Just to give you some, as an example of some of the things that we've done there, is that before they deploy South Africans to in-country, they have like an orientation induction program that they do. In there, tourism is a module. So we physically have someone from the office who goes and informs and educates those deployees around tourism itself. So at least there'll be a connection from that perspective. So we're starting to stretch our presence to make sure that goes on that side. So we're very clear about where we're going to get these extra 5 million from. And our investment is proportional to where we are deploying assets to get that activity coming through. Now, on the flip side, it becomes important. Now that we're very clear on the source markets we're getting people from, what about the distribution? Where are all these tourists going to be going to? Because no one travels to national. National doesn't exist. You know, everyone goes to a destination. And it becomes key and very much a deliberate attempt to make sure that we collaborate, partner with the provinces themselves. The provincial tourism authorities do not formally report to us, but they're definitely part of our ecosystem. So what we are doing with them is that during the month of July, we are going around to each province, and we're going to be signing performance agreements with them. That starts to say, these 5 million extra visitors are coming through. How are they going to be split up? So how much is Free State expecting? How much is Eastern Cape expecting? How much is Gauteng expecting? And therefore start to align our efforts to make sure that we can support them from that perspective. So if we know that the UK is a major source market for the Eastern Cape, as an example, then our UK country manager must know that they are actually championing the agenda of the Eastern Cape. 10% of their KPI, 10% of their time is driven towards the Eastern Cape, as an example. So we're starting to have these linkages between the two to have it seamless, because you want to get to a stage ultimately that if you add up all the APPs of the provinces, it should equal national. At the moment, we're not even near those space. So we're starting to align ourselves to make sure that we can start to take those through. It also becomes important that we collaborate in order to amplify some of the events. So there's a couple of key events coming through at the moment. This coming weekend is a Durban July, as an example, in Durban. Same time as well is the Grahamstown National Arts Festival. At the moment, it's the provinces that are driving and doing the heavy lifting on these. And over time, what we want to do is want to lift these events and make sure that we profile them in our international markets where we have presence. You know, so therefore, if the identified market for Durban July becomes, I don't know, Nigeria and the UK, our country offices there should be pushing this and make sure that becomes packaged in order to attract that market coming through. So suddenly now, an event happening in Durban is not just about Gauteng alone, but it's a global event. How do we take the Comrades Marathon to make sure it becomes, on the global stage, it becomes part of the bucket list, or Grand Slam as an example? These are the things that we are deliberately starting to tie up and link together. That is the strength and the collaboration that we want to drive between SA Tourism and also the provincial tourism authorities as well. In there, we also talk about air access. So how do we make sure there are more flights going to the destination that is also commercially viable from that perspective? So a huge, huge element of our delivery within SA Tourism of this 5 and 5 is the provinces themselves. And I must say, you know, the preliminary conversation that I've had with them is very positive. I meet with the CEOs of the provincial tourism authorities every 2 months, and in there we start to track progress, we start to track these numbers, and make sure there's a push-pull kind of effect from that perspective. So we are now taking all of the activities happening in the provinces and make sure these are globalized from that perspective. Some of the trends that we've seen around the world, you know, what are travelers looking for? You'd be amazed. You know, if you are from Europe, you're not looking for a mini Europe experience in Africa. You know, so it doesn't make sense to replicate, you know, some of the activities happening over there. Immersion is a big drive at the moment. People want to immerse themselves in the local cultures that are there. So new phenomena are starting to come through. Cultural tourism, township tourism, rural tourism, things like homestays, right, where suddenly now a rural hut in the village becomes an attractive destination, you know, for travelers around the world who actually want to immerse themselves, you know, with the South African environment, the population. They want to eat, cook, and live like the locals from that side. So again, in this 5 and 5, as we grow this space, we will be growing it with new players that we're introducing on board. So therefore, we want the new emerging players to be bringing about not more of the same, but different experiences that start to add on from that perspective. And that becomes key part and parcel as we have within our transformation agenda from that side. It therefore becomes important as we link up with the department itself that through all of the initiatives, right, whether they be, you know, training tour guides in Mandarin and in German as an example, to be helping with the infrastructure fund, to be setting up new establishments, that all of these activities that are being invested on find a market and a home within SA Tourism. So to make sure that we don't create what we call white elephants with the institutions, that they become part and parcel of what we market as SA Tourism, so that all of these initiatives that come through have a place and firmly within South African tourism. And that's a very exciting proposition basically for us. The grading side, we still have some work to do on that one. And we've got to take what I call grading to the people. Right? We want to start to have roadshows where we go into communities, where we go into townships to inform and educate people around the benefits of being graded. Right? Because there's still perceptions around it that we want to change. So if I'm not graded, because it's voluntary, if I'm not graded, what's the difference between graded and not being graded? And we want to start to bring through some of those benefits and interactions basically on that side. I'm now going to go through some of the, go to slide 40 if you can. I'm going to go through some of our goals that we've set for ourselves as part of the APP itself. Key things to highlight. One is arrivals, right? And I've spoken to on that one. 5 and 5 is about arrivals, domestic arrivals and international arrivals. That becomes key. That drives us. 5 and 5, basically. The base has been set in 2016, and we want to grow, basically, from there on. Key thing to highlight, 40% growth. That's quite steep, as I said earlier on. But if you look at over 5 years, it ranges from each market of about 6% to something like 14-15% for some markets over there. So we're quite competent. And remember, we market deliberately and different to each country around the world based on some of the things that we're looking for. Let me give an example. So when we market in Kenya, there's no point in us putting up a billboard and marketing South Africa as a safari destination, right? Kenya's got their own lions, right? So why would they come and kind of observe lions basically over here? But if you understand that Kenya is a heritage market, you know, and a business market, then we profile ourselves accordingly in that space. So if we start to know that Angola, you know, loves shopping, then we'll profile South Africa as a shopping destination for that market. So we become very deliberate and very chiseled as opposed to becoming everything and spray and praying around. That's how granular we're becoming from that side. And we all know as to which markets or which provinces Angolans love to visit. So therefore, part of the preparation is to make sure that if they love going to Limpopo, then guess what? Limpopo better make sure that they become user-friendly to Angola market. Things like language. Do you have your menus in Portuguese as well? You know, both in English and Portuguese. The signage. Do you have people in your establishment being able to speak the language? Do they understand the culture, their food, and everything else? So that becomes quite a specific thing that we're actually driving in that space. Key things, I've spoken about the arrivals, are very much big on our side. Linked to arrivals is spend per tourist. And how you influence spend, right, is that instead of the average tourist spending 3 days, we want to move the 3 days to 7 days. And how do you do that? It is in this new and more collection of things that you're going to have, activities than before. So if you look at it simply like a shop window, if you only have three products, at the moment, by the way, we really focus on three big products. That's the beach, that's the burger, the mountain, and the bush. So you only have three products to sell, right? At some point in time, you're going to be limited to that. We want to bring more elements into it, right? Again, I've talked about cultural tourism, I've talked about sports tourism, I've talked about township tourism. And suddenly, you no longer have three things to sell, you can have 10, 15. There's more things to buy. We're also focusing on the repeat visitor, right? So when you come in the second time, surely there will be new and different things that you could see at. So that becomes important. And each province has got its own unique flavor, its own uniqueness, basically, that you want to bring on board in that regard. You know, part of the challenge to the province is that things like we want to see more Vilakazi streets in each province, an example, where, again, township becomes tourism hubs as opposed to just hostels at the moment, basically. And that is deliberately working between ourselves, NDT, and also the provinces as well. Geographic spread is part of our targets in APP to make sure that the benefits of tourism go beyond just the big nodes of Western Cape, of KZN, of Gauteng, and Limpopo and Mpumalanga. How do we make sure the Northern Cape gets a slice? How do we make sure the Free State also starts to come through, the Northwest as well? Again, the only way sometimes you're going to get people traveling to the most remote of areas is if we smartly start to package events that attract people to go over there. And once they are there, they start to discover, you know, the entities and the areas in that regard. To give you a quick example of some of the things we're working on is that Cricket South Africa has just announced the T20 equivalent, basically, of the IPL that South Africa is embarking on. It's over 6 weeks, every single year between November and mid-December, right? And these cricket games are going to be happening in not just the big urban nodes, but also the areas that are outside in the smaller, what we call second-tier stadiums. The likes of Kimberley's are going to be part of and parcel of it. So when that game happens in Kimberley, it is time for Kimberley to show off itself, right? So how do you make sure that when people come to watch the game, what do they do after the game? Where do they go eat? Where do they go explore the place? So that they can start to see, oh, well, I could come back here with my family, or I can do more, and now I can come back, et cetera, et cetera. So the packaging of it becomes deliberate, it becomes specific, and we're using events as a lead. We're going to be speaking to the likes of even the PSL as an example. How do you start to fill up those stadiums? You know, and the people following their teams, but it's in the packaging. It's how you bring all these pieces together. You know, and it's about profiling and having B&Bs to be part and parcel of those packages. It's about transportation. It's about, you know, the food, the flavors, and everything else. So we deliberately start to drive all of this, you know, as anchors that start to pull through from that side. So I've spoken about geographic spread. Seasonality becomes important. You know, a place like Cape Town, December, you can't get accommodation, as an example. So there's no point in marketing Cape Town as a destination point in December because you're not going to get an incremental growth. But guess what? Joburg opens up, right? Suddenly there's no one in Joburg. People celebrate that you can drive openly in the streets. I suppose it's a good thing because there's no traffic. It's a bad thing for us because now you've got capacity that you're loading on that side, right? And you've got all these wonderful shopping centers that have got no one going through on that side. So we want to start to deliberate now, market quite loudly that Gauteng is a place to go over December, as an example, to make sure that you start to even it out. It becomes important because we don't want the jobs in tourism to be seasonal, meaning that you only have a job for 6 months of the year. The other 6 months of the year, basically, you sit at home because there's no tourism activity. We want to make sure that jobs are permanent. We want to make sure that activity within tourism is consistent, basically, and not just flat in that regard. So, again, it's linking up with the provinces and being very deliberate. You know, there are some markets that are very good for our off-peak season. India is one of them. During the monsoon season, it is actually our off-peak season. And guess what? They want to come to South Africa. So, therefore, we profile ourselves as a place to go to in India during our off-peak. So we start to lever some of those activities happening on that side. Key, also important, is around brand awareness and the positivity. And this is a holistic challenge here. Because before you come to Mpumalanga or go bungee jumping, you've got to start to buy into South Africa. So when someone thinks of South Africa, how do they feel about the country? How do they feel? Are they positive? Are they aware of the brand? You know, that type of thing. And this is where we do a lot of collaborative work with Brand South Africa. And Brand South Africa is about showcasing South Africa as a destination, not just for tourism, but as an investment destination as well, making sure that we've got a warm feel vibe around South Africa as a place to go. Again, it's also opportune with some of the stuff happening around the world. Suddenly now the things that the tourists used to worry about are negligible relative to some of the bigger global issues that are starting to happen over that space. So it becomes quite key that we drive a brand awareness and positivity. And as I say, we do this through a Brand South Africa as well. On the domestic side, the deputy chair spoke earlier on around our organizational design. Because we are shifting from just being an organization that just pumps out adverts and initiatives, and we are now an outcome-based, performance-based organization, we had to relook at how we are shaped around the table. We had to relook at our operating model. We had to relook at the people that we have. Are they in the right places with the right skills doing the right things as well? And through this whole reorganization space, we've really beefed up certain areas and really put some serious resources behind it, and in terms of talent and also everything else. Domestic is one of them. South Africa is one of them. You really want to get South Africa moving, right? Again, amidst all of these challenges that we have at the moment, junk status, recession, highest level of employment, unemployment the highest amongst the youth as well. Despite all of that, we want to make sure we drive it hard because we want fundamentally believe at some point in time this economy will turn, and when it does turn, we want to be part and parcel of that uplift and part and parcel of that growth as we go through on that side. So when we speak about growth, it's growth absorbing new players in who are coming with new and unique value proposition and not more of the same. So therefore, we start to position South Africa as a melting pot of different experiences, different areas as well, and make sure that, you know, South Africans become curious about their own country. How do they start to travel a bit more? You know, we want to reactivate our short left campaign, you know, which was a wonderful, wonderful awareness campaign, right? But it's getting a bit tired. So what's the short left 2.0 that's going to lift us up basically from it? And it's things like where previously we spend a lot of time and focus on awareness, it's now execution. So if you sit at home and you like and we entice you, how do you press a button? What's the book button that says I can book this tour at $4.99 and next week I can go basically on it? So the shift is then to move away from being awareness but to actually execution and to make sure that we drive as South Africans in that regard. When you look at domestic tourism, there are essentially three areas. There is what you call VFR, visiting friends and relatives. That consumes something like 70% of the domestic activity that we're seeing around there. So it's me traveling from one province to the next, and instead of staying in a hotel, I stay over at my friend's place, Tebe. One day you will invite me to your house. You know, so that's what we call visiting friends and relatives. The second part, 20% of those 24 million domestic tourism travelers, 20% of this is what we call business tourism. These are people like me and Tom today who come to Cape Town to do business, right? And traveling right across the country to really, the primary reason for travel is business itself. Business tourism is a nice opportunity to convert of what we call business to leisure. And the younger crowd in the office call it leisure, basically. How do you convert this business to leisure? Whether you come here for conferencing or whatever that side. Then the last 10% or so is what we call holiday trips. And this is where deliberately, you know, your main source or main reason for traveling is based around I'm traveling for holiday purposes and actually starting to stimulate that economic space. There's a new phenomenon starting to happen across the board. One becomes around things like Airbnb, right? There is a policy issue that I think over time needs to be clarified as to, you know, the role and impact of Airbnb that it plays. The problem with the likes is it's great, it's a disruptor, it's a global phenomenon, but currently at the moment, we have no way of picking up those statistics and make sure that they're included within those numbers, you know, and that becomes a gap in that regard. Which leads me to my next point is that the minister, something like 18 months ago, had put together a committee to look at statistics, to start to look at how South Africa collects statistics, how South Africa reports of these statistics, because we make a lot of information, a lot of decisions based on these statistics. There's a time that, you know, State SA has got its own source of statistics, SA Tourism has its own source of research and statistics, Brand SA has one. So we are now going to have a single framework that we start to look at statistics and make sure that we're able to report on them, that everyone starts to read from the same hymn sheet when you start to look basically on that side. Linked to that one as well is that SA Tourism is part of UNWTO Global Statistics, and UNWTO reports on a calendar year, which is from January to December. And, you know, however, because we're a government entity and, you know, under the prescripts of the PFMA, we are required to report from during the financial year, which is April to March. So what you've seen sometimes is that there's a three-month lag or differentiation between the figures that we use and basically what's required by, you know, our PFMA regime. We have made an undertaking with the Auditor General that will start to report on both statistics in the next financial year. So you will see the calendar numbers as per UNWTO, but you also start to see PFMA numbers to make sure there's alignment with resources that are allocated to us as per the PFMA regime versus to what to start get delivered basically on that side. The last issue that I'd like to bring before I close off is around these provincial performance agreements. And we deliberately call them the performance agreements because I think the word MOU sometimes loses a lot of impact. There's no shortage of MOUs, but we want to make things that become accountable. We want to start to drive the performance that we see basically from that side. So the provincial roadshows that we're going to be doing, we're going to each and every single province, and each and every single province will be sitting down with them and saying, what is the quota, what is the number that we're going to create jointly with the province that becomes the same number that we're going to drive towards, so that the delivery of these numbers becomes shared between SA Tourism and also the provincial tourism authorities. And also as well, we co-create, we co-collaborate to drive the space in that regard. So I've spoken, issues around inclusive growth becomes key, part and parcel. SME development is something the Deputy Minister is really passionate about, around making sure we bring in youth into the space. We do bring in women into the space. We do bring in key new players, black players, who become part of establishment owners, who become part of tourism operators. And it is in these new and unique experiences that we look to these groupings to bring them through. We have a program which we call Hidden Gems, which we do collaboratively with the department itself. And again, it is about bringing through new players that we are going to be supporting and highlighting. It's not a once-off event that we showcase them off in Durban, that's that. But in anything that we do at SA Tourism, when we start to have international trade expos into the UK or German market, they need to be part and parcel of that delegation. We have to prepare them so they can profile South Africa in that unique way that is complementary to what is already there. Similarly, when we have trade delegates coming into South Africa, their establishments need to be profiled and put through in that regard. So we really want to expand on these hidden gems and, you know, almost go on a hidden gems 2.0 as a result. So all of the emerging activity needs to happen within that space. But what's more important, we're not just doing capacity building for the sake of capacity building. There has to be an outlet. There has to be market access. We've got to be able to tell specific stories about specific names and businesses that previously there were 10, now they're 20, they're 30, et cetera, et cetera, as a result of the space. So this growth has got to include both sides, basically, of it. I'm going to put a pin on there, and I'm going to hand over to Tom, our Chief Financial Officer, just to take us through some of the numbers. I've alluded to some of them, and I think we're probably about 10 to 15 minutes, and then after that, we can throw back for questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO. Honorable members, honorable chair, I will take you through the financial information. This slide, the next slide. Thank you. I think if one look, before I start with that, the budget over the next 3 years, 17-18, 18-19, and 19-20, I think I just need to allude to a few things. I think the first thing is that we did not miss the cut in the budget. We also had to go through the 1% cut, of which the National Treasury, the Minister of Finance has done. So the cut over 3 years was 57 million rand. So that is the government grants, the net figure that we have received from the department and the National Treasury. So included in the government grant, one will then also see that we have grown in the past few years from 846 million rand to 1.13 billion rand. Included in that 1.31 billion rand in 17-18, the current financial year, is then also we have received new money, if I can call it new money, for the subvention fund, 20, 30, and 40 million rand is 90 million rand over 3 years. And we've also received for marketing investment 50, 60, and 64 million rand. In the budget speech, which the Minister of Finance announced, over 400 million rand, 264 million rand of those came to South African tourism. So what the CEO also alluded to is the marketing investment framework, the so-called MIF. The Treasury visited our office to also to understand what's the science behind our marketing structure. So we have explained to them and we have presented to them the science behind that, and I think they were very comfortable with the amount, with the science behind that, and that's what I've increased our budget. You want to go to the next, the next line. Go back to the next slide. The next line, the TOMSA levies, which the CEO also referred to, the voluntary TOMSA levies, 1%. One will see that in 2013-14, there's 131 million rand. It looks like there's a decline. That was a kind of administrative issue between us and the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, where they paid five tranches instead of four. They normally transfer every quarter of money to us. And that year, they transferred five quarters. And the previous year, they transferred three quarters. So that was not a decline in the TOMSA levy. So we've also agreed with the TBCSA that we need to have a more kind of scientific way and to reflect our budget. So we have agreed that over the next 3 years, 124 million rand per annum for the TOMSA levies. Included in that is also the collaborative fund. It's 15% between the TBCSA and us, where we as TBCA and South African Tourism will have joint projects. And that money is earmarked for joint projects. So the other money we can take to international marketing. So 18 million rand of that 124 million rand is kind of for a joint project between two of us. Indaba and Meetings Africa and other platforms, we've consolidated all the platforms. So that's the revenue that we generate through those platforms. Grading fees, as the CEO said, we try to also look at the targets. That is based on the targets. 21 million rand that we kind of generate through that. I must also allude to that what the CEO indicated is that from the department side, they have the tourism incentive program for those who qualify for certain specific criteria. We subsidize 80% of those establishments. We subsidize 80% of those amounts we establish. So we're almost free grading for the establishment. But that's a project we started to implement, so I think it's kicking off and we can see the progress in that. Sundry income is normally the interest we receive, what we receive from a treasury. Right up front is that to mitigate the currency exposure, is that we get the money up front and then we put it in the different bank accounts of the different countries. I just want to make you, honorable members, make you aware of that, that in a foreign country, especially in Europe, there is not huge interest. So we talk about some of the 1%, some of the less than 1%, but a total kind of accrued interest that we, is about 18 million rand that we accrue through interest, and that's why it's under sundry revenue. So the total budget for South African tourism for 2017-18 is 1.3 billion rand. 18-19, 1.4 billion rand, and in 19-20, 1.5 billion rand. So I think that's quite a good investment, and that's the 53% that the Deputy Minister has referred to in the submission. I think just to give some highlight in terms of our budget increases is that so the increase in government is 90 million, as I have discussed earlier, the 174 million rand. And then also one will see that the 75 million rand is 25 million rand per annum for Tom Salewi. So it's from 99 to 124 million rand, so 25 million rand per annum. So I think we're quite safe on that amount and to use that as a base for our grading, for our budget. I've discussed the grading fees and then also the investment marketing. Perhaps this is a good, in terms of our mandate, we try to be honest with our mandate to market the country. 72% of our budget is going to marketing incentive. So the budget is going for 72%. Operating cost is 12%, which includes research, which is about 74 million rand. And the employee cost is 14% of our total budget. So really we try to focus on our mandate and spend the money on our mandate. So we do not spend on overheads, but rather on marketing the budget. So I think that is the kind of highlight from this. If one goes to the different programs, the previous year when we presented this to the select committee, we had about 7 KPIs. The Department of Monitoring and Evaluation and National Treasury has forced us to go to the program structures. We have now amended that to the program structures. So this is the program structures which they have agreed upon. So corporate support, we will spend 95 million, 99 million rand this year, and that's the normal CEO's office, finance, HR, human resource and capital, so that's the money that we will spend on that. Business enablement is the biggest amount of 74 million rand, 87 million rand is for the research that we kind of, because it's also a research environment, so we spend the money on research. Leisure tourism, one can see how much money we spend on leisure tourism. Business events, 107 million rand. The reason why there's a huge increase from previous years to business tourism is we've also moved from leisure tourism, the Indaba and Meetings Africa to business events, and also the subvention fund, the 20, 50, and 40 million rand, as I've referred to, is also now part of that. And that's ring-fence money from the treasury, so that money is also part of business event. And tourist experience is the amount that we get from money that we're going to spend on the graded establishment. So there's a kind of a combination between money that we subsidize and also money that we generate from the grading establishment. I think, honourable members, this is the budget, the expenditure budget, and also the revenue budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. I think that's it for our side, and we welcome any questions from the honourable members. Thank you.
Thank you. I looked at the clock, and I see that we saved 10 minutes. Just a comment before I give the honourable members an opportunity to engage. We looked at tourism material in 1997 when Mancosa did its first training on a master's degree in tourism. And there was very little resource material available in South Africa. When I listened, CEO and Deputy Minister, to the information that you provided, I'm saying so many of the students in tourism are now also having to have access to that so that we could build that area of our training as well. And I don't pity you, DDG, when you're dealing with the local tourism market and have to disperse that type of information. But I wanted to conclude that comment by saying, CEO, when you talk about visiting the provinces in July, we are having our recess period in July. And I'm sure that many of the colleagues would like to have at least the choice to know that you will be in the province at that time, and then they can decide whether they would want to observe the engagements that you're having with the tourism, with the government officials on tourism in the province. I'm struggling with it because I know that in Gauteng, for example, if you talk about Vilakazi Street, I read the other day of the box shop, and that's run by the municipality and not by the province. It's
So you'll have this provincial engagement and you'll have the municipal engagements as well. But to say, if you can share that with us through the office of our secretary, we will share it with the members of the committees, and then they will have the prerogative to make a decision as to whether they would want to join you in those deliberations that you'll be having in the provinces. Honourable members, can I throw the input open for any further comments and questions? Can I get an indication of hands, please? The Honourable Mokhwebu from Eastern Cape, and then the Honourable Chai from Eastern Cape, and then we'll have the Honourable Chabango from Free State, and then we'll have the Honourable Mtetwa, who joined us late, but he is from that province that does excellent work on tourism, KwaZulu-Natal. I know that they are one of the few that I have noticed at OR Tambo who have a name for it, but let me call it a tourism store. I know you have a different name, but they're doing very well on that. Honourable Chabango, I have noticed you.
Yeah, Chairperson, with a different matter. Can we please have water, even if there is no water in Cape Town? In Latin it is said, aqua vivit. Can I explain? Which means water is needed for life. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chabango, for raising that. I'm sitting here thoroughly embarrassed. You'll see Martins is not here, so I can't even check with him. But I've had reports from our secretary. I've had reports from both our assistants for the chairpersons, where they're saying they don't know what's happening. Why are we not being catered for this morning? I will take it up with the chairperson of select committees, because we're having two meetings in the same venue today, and we are not provided for, and the persons who are responsible for logistics, or the person, because he does it for both committees, is not here to tell us what the difficulty is. My apologies. It's something outside of my control. I don't do catering. But if there's no catering and you are inconvenienced, I will take it up on your behalf with the chairperson of committees. I think Chai is asking his PA to maybe investigate just further on that. But I'm terribly sorry to all the members and our guests as well. As you were talking, CEO, I got thirsty. And we're terribly sorry. We don't have any other means. We're dependent upon those that are providing these services to us. My apologies. Let's have you, Honourable Mahmoud.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We'll proceed without water. We'll see how far we go. I just want to say, you know, I welcome the presentation and the Honourable Deputy Minister, CEO, and the tourism team. You know, you can't help but, you know, be reminded about the beauty of being a South African. When you hear team tourism, you get a sense of the passion, you know, about the country, what we can achieve and how beautiful we are. Because sometimes, no doubt, we are living in different, difficult times in South Africa today. You know, I'll leave it there. But team tourism reminds us that we can, rise, and we will always rise. But my question is on domestic tourism, one, and then quickly on global tourism. You know, CEO, in your presentation, and you indicated, you're planning to draw closer to provinces and enter into performance agreements with them. And I think that is long overdue. I want to commend you on that, because every province has a potential. But I think we've been working in a manner that I would say it was, with due respect, very unstructured. And unfortunately, we couldn't maximize the opportunities. For instance, in the Eastern Cape, where I come from, because I can only talk about that now. But I know other provinces as well. There's already, a lot happening that we can is untapped or it can be maximized. Like, for instance, you've talked about the National Arts Festival as a tourist attraction and how we would want it to grow to become an international, you know, event. And I think to me that's, you know, beautiful, and I'm excited about that. But there's more, you know, I think about in East London, where I live. There's Buele Kaya Music Festival that is a big event during the festive season. But I also feel that it's untapped with you drawing to the province and help them, you know. It cannot be that Buele Kaya is 1 or 2 day event and then boom, bang, is gone. And we can do more and tap into that, you know. There must be build-up events to that and many. But all you see is just young men and women chewing at tops by booze and get to that, and then there's music extravaganza the whole night. So tops and spa benefit. What about black people there? You know, how can we maximize that? You guys must help us think in the province, because already you could see that there's potential in that. So that's my first part. And related to that, you talked about the DMCs. You know, I just want you to unpack that for me, because it sounds interesting. You know, these domestic marketing companies, you know, how would you, you know, bring them up, and how do you, what is it that they will do, and how would they can help us? I'm not sure I understand that, but if you can help me with that. Then lastly, on the issue of, on the global tourism, you know, we had a terrible event that was very embarrassing. I think Honorable Khai, we were together, we're coming from a study tour, Singapore, Malaysia. When we were back home after 2 weeks, at the airport, you know, there was a strike, we couldn't get a flight. But it was not about us, we were able to get home in one way or the other. But here is my point. There were international tourists there, we were frustrated, and SAA had no plan. The whole day was messed up. I remember standing in the queue, and even myself paralyzed, not knowing what to do. And hearing people saying, I'm from Nigeria, I had a business meeting in Port Elizabeth, I'm from this country, I have a business meeting, and this is a waste. If I cannot meet these people at 2, I'm doomed. And SAA was caught off guard, and it was very embarrassing. So when you begin to work with these stakeholders, government entities like SAA, and the department SAA, I think, is... SAA, I think, is one of the departments you need to draw closer to it, so that we deal with the issues of transport and air transport, because those issues, they are discouraging people who want to come back to the country again. So your stakeholders with government, other government entities, whilst you are traveling to provinces, must also be fostered and be bolstered. That is my input, and thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you to the Chairperson and the CEO for the presentation. It was very comprehensive. I just wanted to check with regard to particularly UK, whether the Brexit process has affected tourism visit to our country. The issue of TOMSA, the 10%, I wanted to know if it is also set with the provincial tourism boards or authorities. I just wanted, with regard to, you said that there's a module that is, the deployees who are ambassadors to various countries on behalf of South Africa are trained. I wanted to check if a similar training could be for MPs, and then you have MPs also as ambassadors for South African tourism. You know, just in July, there are various committees that will be going out of the country, in various countries, meeting you know, governments and other stakeholders. It would have been good if those MPs, as part of what they would be doing, would also be to market and promote South Africa. And so I think as MPs, who are missing that point, all we do, we just talk about the programs that we've developed. He was explaining that in April we were in Malaysia and Indonesia. All that we were talking about was what was contained in our program. We didn't say, in fact, most of the people that we met, I don't think they've been to South Africa. It's only one place where, which is like a botnet. I can't remember now what it's called. There's one captain there that he's been to Cape Town, to Table Mountain. But we're not able, didn't even have any material that we could leave with them. So if one, the training, two, and also the material, perhaps if we could find out which committees will be. I know there are a lot of committees that will be going up to during the recess period. The issue that is also painful to me with regard to the issue of SMMEs, particularly black-owned. Like, we do this even as a parliament. We, in last year, as part of taking parliament to the people in the Eastern Cape, we also visited various places as part of their program. We went to a place near Ntabakandoda. The owner of this facility was complaining. He's got everything. He's got salaries, he's got a venue for meetings, everything. But, government is not using those facilities. Not only government, even parliament. There's also, when we were in the Eastern Cape, we were accommodated in these big hotels. None of the people that, we're talking about thousands of people that were there, because it was taking parliament to the people that combined with taking legislature to the people. So you had the MPs and MPLs, officials from parliament, officials from the provincial government. All of us were booked in this establishment that already. None of the people were accommodated in places like township and all that. Now in August, we're going to a free state. Even though I don't know where we're going to be accommodated, but I can bet that all of us will be in big hotels accommodated there. So I don't know what SA Tourism could do. I don't know also even government, for example, particularly the department, DM, of monitoring and evaluation, if that could also be part perhaps of checking whether departments are also, as part of also Black Economic Empowerment, are using establishment owned by Black people, for accommodation. If we could also be part of their performance. Sorry, there's also one thing that I observe also in East London. When work is allocated to perhaps some small business people, they would tender for accommodation, for example. And this person knows that she doesn't have enough accommodation. But what then she would do, she would contact other, B&Bs and start saying, I have so many people that I can give to you. But then in return, this person must also give a certain percentage. I don't know how you go around addressing such things, whether it is a responsibility of government or you have a role there to play. The other one was touched by another Makwe, because we were together on this one. I like this idea of the events, but he's also touched on it, the events that are taking place in South Africa, that they should have an international element. You make mention of Durban July. I don't know how that, whether does it mean also people from say, outside the country could also perhaps bring their horses to be part of the, you know, that as well, to attract them to come. But also the fashion show itself, because it also got that element of a fashion show, if they could also come and also, you know, so those could be some of the ideas. The last one on the financial information, if we could have a slide on the economic classification of each program. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also reiterate the fact that the CEO and the Chair and the Deputy Minister, their presentation was of utmost importance. But let me also allude to the fact that the other chairperson has taken all my questions. Therefore, I'll have to start afresh. CEO, I would like to know that politics of our country, do they play a role in decreasing tourism? That's my first question. Protection, Chairperson. If I ask questions, people start discussing.
Man, I can't get in between you.
Then number two, our currency. What factor does it play with regard to tourism? 3 months ago, they've alluded to the fact that we went to Dubai, Singapore, and Malaysia. And our currency compared to Singapore was very low. In fact, if you go there, you must have money in the basket in order to buy. We ended up coming without nothing, without buying nothing. Man next door to me spent 3 plates for 3 days. He spent more than 3,000 for a plate because a plate was 100 rand and it was multiplied by 10. Therefore, these people, when they come to South Africa, they benefit a lot because our currency is very low and you don't charge them. They change money, they exchange money. When they have 100 rand, they've got 1,000 rand. And they buy a lot, more than us. I would like to know the procedure for one to be a member of tourism with regard to BMPs. Where does one apply and how do you let people know your marketing strategy? It has been alluded to that in the Free State hotels are not graded properly. You find hotels that are below par and those that are 5 stars. How do you grade them? Because they charge tourists the same amount. CEO, do you encourage BMBs that attract people to come and sleep around only without eating or drinking? Those that are called sleeping place for lovers. How do you monitor this? Because they would say, come and pay for 2 hours is 150, for a night is 250, and so forth and so forth. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mteta, let's have you the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me apologize for being late. Although I came late, but I able to catch up some of the things that were presented by the CEO. But my most... let me appreciate that the tourism industry for the first time in South Africa is doing a great job, especially when you mention that we need to have more villager streets in our areas. We also mentioned that Cape Town in December time is fully booked, and when you said that, it clicked into my head that in Khayelitsha, enyanga are still available even in December. But the problem, the people from the township, they don't understand the route that they must take in order to build their businesses, especially to have a share in that tourism industry. And since the inception, we as people from the township, from the rural areas, we talk about tourism, but we fail to penetrate that industry in a way that we have we benefit on it. I remember the call that was made by the whole South African government before 2010. They said, build your houses, extend your houses at home. People will be flocking in South Africa, and the hotel will be fully booked, and you will get more tourists in your areas. They even said, build a roundabout, put not even a metrans, put Ikwansi, because these people, they want to experience something different from their areas. Indeed, 2010 arrived and gone. We didn't get anything. I always think maybe is that when they encourage us to do that, they didn't say to us, they didn't give us the way to register. So we'll be able to be in the internet, in the marketplace. Because a tourist from Britain, coming to South Africa, from Britain, he knows exactly where I'm going to, where I'm going to sleep. And our areas, our B&Bs, our homes are not on that database. What do you do to spread more more market, more business to our own black areas, so that we can able to have a share in this big industry of tourism? Because it's useless for us to talk about tourism that Cape Town is fully booked in December, Durban is fully booked in December. But when you go to Mlazi, there's a B&B there, stays empty even in December time. When you go to Wamacho, the same thing. When you go to Nduzuma, the same thing. When you go to the rural areas, in Tatu, the Richards Bay, where I'm coming from, it's the same thing. Because we are not in the database, and people are not trained to know which route they must take. The thing that I want to know is that we got places, heritage places, mostly in our areas, but we don't have our own tour guides there. The tour guides that we have is the tour guides that are coming from a well-developed place, from town to the rural areas. But in the rural areas, we don't have our own tour guides that they can able to take the tourists around the areas. What do you do to penetrate that market? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let me just say two things before I allow you. The one is the Honorable Dikgale was summoned. You saw the lady coming to me here by the chairperson of the NCOP. They asked her before to accompany the chairperson to a meeting, and she decided to come here. So they came to say to me, the chairperson wants her now. So she wanted to be here, but had to meet that obligation with the chair as well. So her apology. She spoke to me before the meeting started. My question would have two prongs to it. The first is that during the Women's Tourism Conference in Pretoria last year, where the now minister, then deputy minister, was the main speaker, there was a group of people, I'm sure DDG, you might remember them, the group of people from KwaZulu-Natal, who are looking at tourism for people with disabilities. and they have said that they will take this thing on in KZN to cater particularly for people with disabilities who wishes to tour certain parts of KZN. CEO, can you give us some indication how are we progressing in that sphere of the tourism market? The second one is related to the tourism local government conference that we attended last year. I've heard many of our members expressing appreciation for the fact that the conference happened, but said that there is an untapped market. There is an untapped potential, rather, within the local sphere of government. Are you engaging with SALGA when you look at enabling, like the example that has been made by Honorable Mtetwa now and earlier on also about people in BBBs, so that the local government becomes a partner of SA Tourism in terms of enabling people at that local government level to benefit from the tourism industry? Let's have that as all the questions for now, and you can either as Deputy Minister or as CEO lead the responses. It's in your hands. Thank you.
You can take the question from Sean. Take the most difficult ones and leave the easy ones for me then today.
But I do think the key sentiment that's coming through really speaks to the transformation of the of tourism industry, and I think what the CEO probably will allude to and talk to is our earnest effort being led by NDT and as an agency to really try and transform the industry. I think you also noticed that the recent Indaba, following on last year's one, we brought 90 SME products to Indaba to really expose them and give them a platform to showcase what they can offer. Is an effort by collectively from the political and agency to drive the transformation of the industry, and that's come through in many of the questions. But I'd like the CEO to perhaps address question by question our comprehensive responses to those.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Deputy Chair and Deputy Minister. Honourable Members, I'm very excited at the level of engagement and enthusiasm. You are indeed a tourism ambassador, so it's very much appreciated. You know, sometimes when you speak, you don't know if people are listening to you or they are, but I gather there's a lot of commitment from that side, so thank you very much. I'm going to be answering some questions with a bit of an overlay to some of them, right? And I'll start with this one. One thing that always occupies my mind is, how does a BNB in Mdanzane become visible to the tourist who's in France? Right? So how does that? If you think about it, both come from different worlds. And by the way, that BNB does want the French visitor. The French visitor wants to go to the BNB, but they're just not on the same level of platform. That's the first one, right? The second one is I look at practical things like Makufe. As an example, everyone knows that festivals go to Makufe. One thing was here, I can't get accommodation, right? But believe me, there's a frustrated BNB owner somewhere who says, I'm available. And there is a willing someone out there, but they just can't find each other. So you've got this information asymmetry. So let me start with the first one. Is that you asked what a DMC is, right? A DMC is a destination management company. To give an example of a DMC, it's like a Thompson's. Right? So what they do is they create packages. They put a B&B, they put transport, they put food, they put a restaurant, put the whole thing together and sell it to you as one package for $5.99 or $6.99, whatever it is. Now, what we need to do is we need to have more black-owned DMCs who start to package these B&Bs together. The BNB should focus on running the best establishment and focus on doing that. But they need to be packaged because you need someone who's going to make them visible, basically, to the rest of the world. Yes, so I think that's the big driver. So we need to build more black-owned DMCs that start to bring in these new elements, because the reality is that existing DMCs have been very successful at selling and packaging what they know, right? And rightfully so. They package what they know. How do you bring about these new elements? When I spoke about, you know, different things you can sell in the shop, how do they become packaged? And how do we, as I say, tourism, give these black-owned DMCs platforms that we actually start to see and make their specials visible? So when I speak about us having a relationship with the PSL, it needs to come out in the paper, in the media, in social media that says, you know what, Orlando Pirates is playing in Limpopo as an example. I get jazzed on numbers, right? So $8.99, that's an example. You see,
that thing affects lots of people.
I don't recognize that, but for one, we will not talk about it.
Okay, any team. So it says for $8.99, you can now go watch a match, basically, in Limpopo. But within there, it's packaged. $8.99 gives you accommodation, it gives you transport, it gives you an excursion as well, it gives you food. Everything is packaged within that space. That's what we need to move towards. Mauritius does it very well. You only see them saying this, $5.99, 7 days, all board, you just have to pitch up, that's it. So we want to build more DMCs that start to include a lot of these players, basically, in that regard. So that becomes key and parcel. So in this hidden gems, in these programs of bringing new players in, we want to develop them as well. The other thing as well is that when we have international trade expos, we go to the German market, we take trade with us. And previously, part of our mistakes is that in our quest to bring more black players involved, we just have not been specific and deliberate in whom we bring on board. So if you bring someone who owns and runs a restaurant, it's great, but it's the wrong platform for them. Because you want to put that alongside a Thompson's. Thompson's is selling a 7-day affair. They're selling a 2-hour experience. What that restaurant needs to do, they need to be included in the itinerary of a DMC. You understand? So that's how we start to build this kind of specific space. And that DMC is someone in the middle who packages and makes sure that comes through and actually puts that experience. And that's what we're going to be driving. So deliberately, when you have specific events around East London, you mentioned that one as an example, my way. It can't just only be East Londoners who go there. We want the rest of the country to be aware of it, right? And the only way they're going to do that is that when they package together. Because someone from Limpopo may not have knowledge about where to stay and how everything else, but if you've got a DMC over there, that drives it based on that regard. So that's how we're going to make BNBs in remote parts visible, basically, to the rest of the world. The second part relates around innovation. We have to drive innovation. And I think as an organization, we've been lagging a bit around investment in innovation. How do we use these things? These things, the smartphones, as an example, to become enablers and linkages. We are working on a national program, as an example. This thing is going to be super smart in the sense that when you drive into Bloemfontein, Joerimakoko, the app that we'll be developing will be geotagged, which basically means we'll pick you up that you are in the vicinity. And out will pop establishments within a 10-kilometer radius around you that have been graded, that have a price, that are available. You get what I'm saying? So suddenly now that frustrated B&B owner in Bloemfontein will become visible. There are certain provisos, you have to be graded, and. But we'll build that in place. So suddenly now this becomes a great source as you move across. It's like a bespoke travel agent that you have in your pocket. You end up in Takastad at 2 a.m. in the morning, you don't know where to look. Guess what? Just bring this thing up and it'll tell you. And it has them, so it's not just a list of B&Bs, because you don't have to call each one. It'll tell you which ones, what star grading they are, and if they're available. And you can press book, basically, on that side. So we're using technology as an enabler, basically, to kind of bring through that side. We spoke something around our heritage sites and everything else. Within this app as well, as you move around, it will know that you are in there's a museum we've just passed, and it'll give you some information that says X, Y, and Z, blah, 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 basically from that regard. So as a national body, we'll bring through this thing to the center, but the content of it is the responsibility of the province and the local tourism authority. So this is how we're starting to look at how we crowd in new players in, because if we achieve this 5 and 5 of ours that we talk about, but it does not include new players, it's not success to us, right? If we transform the space and we don't achieve the numbers, that's not success to us. It's not either or, it's and. We want to grow, but we want to bring in new players. So we are very deliberate and specific around how we start to bring these issues together. You spoke about something that's very dear to my heart. You know, in every business I've worked in, you've got to understand that the most important entity out there is the customer, right? The customer determines whether they're in business or not. And to translate into the tourism space, it's the tourist, it's the visitor, right? It's not enough to say, it's a tourism, that, hey, we're just responsible for marketing, good luck with the rest, right? We've got to take it all the way through. The deputy chair spoke about an initiative that we launched at Indaba. It's called I Do Tourism. And it is a rallying call to everyone in this country to understand that they play a role within tourism, that we all contribute in one way or the other. Even if you are sweeping the floors of the street, as an example, you contribute towards tourism, because by making our streets clean, we become more desirable. Right? So even to the immigration officer who's working at the airport, right, who reports into Home Affairs, we want them to do a fantastic job, but with the lens of tourism, because they become the first port of call, as an example. So by just throwing a smile, suddenly now, there's a visitor experience changes. Similarly, even the police at the airport, we want them to do a fantastic job, but with the lens of tourism, because each touch point becomes important right across the board. And as far as our national airline is concerned, that actually the experience doesn't start when you hit that OR Tambo. It starts when you get on that SAA plane. Right? So what's get played on board? How do we feature ourselves? I mean, we've learning lessons around the world that actually the country starts to market itself. Why are you sitting on that chair? Because you've got a captured audience for 10 hours. What are you showing them? What are we showing them? Are we showing them comedy from the U.S.? Come on. They come from the U.S. So therefore, deliberately, is what do we show them with that captured audience for 10 hours, as an example. So we're starting to look at collaboration right across the board. So where we sit with SAA that says, listen, we are all jointly involved in this tourism space. So therefore, how do you start to play? And we've got to look at each touch point, what we call moment of truth, to make sure that the connections start to come through on that side. Lastly, on the grading side, you know, we want to change a perception outlook of grading. Mm-hmm. Moving it from a judgmental space, where someone comes in and judges your house and says, you are 2-star, you are 1-star, you are 3-star, whatever it is, to becoming an empowerment process, right? It needs to be an empowering process that says, you are currently 2-star. However, if you add another room, another lavatory, that will get you to 3-star grading, right? It's important. It's important that we have that as an empowering space, because, you know, sometimes many people don't want to open up their homes to be graded because someone's just going to, you know, put a stick on them that, you know, you've got a bad house or a good house. But we want to make sure that we start to build the case for grading. And I talked about taking grading basically to where it matters, to the townships, and start to have those conversations as how we pull everything together. The chair spoke about SALGA. SALGA becomes an important element in all of this because there needs to be an enabling environment. It starts from things like zoning, you know. So if I have a home and I want to convert to a B&B, I have to be zoned accordingly. And if the local municipality does not play ball, I can't operate from that side. Even things like signage, you know. All brown boards in this country are tourism boards, right? All those brown boards. But they are issued and licensed by the local municipality. And if they don't come on board by actually managing it, because you also don't want a whole flood of boards that's all over the show. But if they don't give enough significance to these tourism sites, then that becomes a problem. Yes, the app and technology will help, but we just want to make sure that we've got the basics right and we kind of add on that element on it. How we eventually get to the local tourism is that when we work through the provincial tourism authorities and we sign these performance agreements with them, it is in the incumbent of those provincial tourism authorities to make sure that actually the local tourism authorities, the district tourism authorities, also become part and parcel, basically, of this execution. As much as I said, no one visits national. Actually, no one visits province as well. They get to a destination. The place they sleep at, the place they visit, is a local authority. So that linkage becomes important from that side. There was a question around the tourism levy. How is this shared with the province? The principle is as follows. When we go and we sign these performance agreements with the provinces, within there we expect them, right, in the negotiation, that they will drive towards certain targets. Conversely as well, we will also invest time, effort, and resources to make sure that there's an enabling environment. So just by implication of that, when we say, okay, there is a national arts festival, right? Saying to the Eastern Cape that actually all of the costs that you previously invested in to market this event, SA Tourism will do for you. We'll pick up that entire cost domestically and internationally. But that's what we do. We are very good at driving demand. We'll make sure we drive it and chisel it into that space. Then the cost that the Eastern Cape province or whatever or tourism authority, the cost of the reviews and marketing, they can now divert into something else, right? They can now divert in getting more artists. They can now divert in getting more days or whatever it is, but that's the collaboration. But we've got to be very clear on them that, listen, you better make sure that the number that you drive there, you do have capacity. There's enough beds. There's enough activities and establishments and. So it becomes a push and pull side. They also want to make sure that they don't want to set this thing up and it becomes a white elephant and no one comes. So that's the... This is where we all have a joint and vested interest to make sure the success of this comes through as well. I really appreciate the gesture that came through, Honorable Khai, around training and material supply, basically, of parliamentarians in general. That is very key and awesome. And it also goes towards our all I do tourism, because that's just a good display of you saying you want to do tourism, right? You want to speak proudly of your country, but you just don't have the material. And then you may speak anecdotally of your own different experiences, but if you had a framework with which you have a conversation on, you become an outlet. Because guess what we've understood? We can have the best marketing campaign out there. We can have the best billboards out there. But it's the stories that South Africans tell that turn this thing around. That becomes important. And, you know, and we are very encouraged that we are seeing more and more South Africans traveling, because now they become our marketers as around the world. Previously, some of the research that we got was that some South Africans are actually becoming our worst enemies, because when they asked, I'm thinking about going to Johannesburg, do you think I should go there? Don't go there. There's crime, there's that, there's that, there's that. Now the voice of South Africa is starting to come through that says, actually, there's more of us traveling around, and let's balance that view. Now, one of our big issues that are still scratching my head is, you know, we have a concentration of what I call detractors in the Australia space and also in the UK space. You know, these are expatriates who've left and they don't have a good story to tell about South Africa. So therefore, when they bump into other fellow, you know, Australians who want to travel, they push them back. So we are looking at ways, how do we turn them to become tourism ambassadors and say, I do tourism as a result, basically, from that side. There was a question around the UK and Brexit and what's the implication basically on that side. It's twofold. One, the UK is a major source market for us, right? And the more hard-pressed they are in terms of their ability or accessible income, the more difficult it is to bring them on board. But I think the whole thing around Brexit, we're all riding this wave. There's many pronouncements that have been made, and some of them are coming through, some of them are not. So we are watching the space quite closely. And we've got on-the-ground people over there to make sure that we adjust our campaigns accordingly if we need to. On the flip side, we have an office in the UK. We also send us a question, is this the best place to have an office, right? Is the cost of doing business in that space higher? Should we move it elsewhere? And we're looking at the resource allocation in that perspective. The CFO took us through our distribution. We don't want to be an overhead-heavy organization. So it becomes important that we manage our resource allocation in that regard. In fact, in some instances, we're looking at folding our presence and not become standalone, but become part of DECO. Right? So I'd rather pay rent to DECO square meters than have a standalone office by itself. So we're looking at those efficiencies as how we'll go through as one SA Inc., as an example. To give you a practical example of this, we've got an office in Fifth Avenue, New York, right? There's an embassy as well. The embassy is built, there's going to be a new embassy that's going to be built in New York itself. We're already speaking to them about having office allocation within there so that SA House becomes the space you go to where they want to do tourism, where they want to do investment, where they want to do agriculture, blah, 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 in that regard. So, you know, we are tight. The CFO spoke about how everyone's budget was cut. It's not going to stop, so we need to be smarter as to how we organize ourselves together. Honorable Savang asked about politics. Do they play a role in enticing visitors to come over? Everything plays a role, sir, if I can do that. I spoke about the brand positivity. And in the brand positivity is a whole basket of things that are contained in there. Before you even think about traveling to a space, it needs to be a space that you desire to go there. So therefore, the brand positivity becomes important. Standing alongside Brand South Africa, their key role is to make sure that, you know, A, is something, is a country that, South Africa is a country that people can recall. B, is about making sure that it's the type of space that they'd like to go to as well. More and more trend that we've seen is that we've seen people traveling with a purpose, not just about the holiday themselves, but they want to make sure that they leave the place in a better and more sustainable environment than they previously saw it at. And, you know, this year is what we call the year of sustainability of tourism globally. So we are looking at all sorts of facets from that perspective. There was a question around accessibility, disabilities in that regard, definitely. Again, it is in how we inform and educate the industry that actually by becoming more accessibility friendly, you actually start to attract more business to establishment. So therefore, it is in your own interest to make sure that you have these entities on board. Part of the criteria that we've seen that when people used to travel, they would ask questions like, how eco-friendly are you? Do you use detergents when you wash your laundry, as an example? How do you recycle things, et cetera, et cetera? Because people are becoming a bit more conscious now. It's not just traveling, but I want to make sure that I don't kill the earth as well, that we become inclusive as possible. Certainly from our side, you know, again, we're informing and educating. And the other one is that whenever myself or my executive team, we get called a lot to conference engagements, where we have to speak at conferences, et cetera, and stuff like that. One of the key things we make sure is the establishment accessible, right? Because we want to make sure, basically, that all of these things are there. Physically, is it accessible? But also, as well, does it cater for people that are deaf, as an example, or blind, or braille? So we're trying to incorporate all of this in, and it's about building awareness step by step. When people start to see the economic benefit and the market potential, you will see them definitely starting to come on board from that side. Also, Honorable Khai spoke about, granddaughter. I come from that side of the world, so it's personal as well, you know. I think the key thing to say, basically, around there, again, is market access, right? You've got beautiful establishments. They are there. The entrepreneur, the business person has invested, but no one's coming. So how do we make sure that everyone starts to come? Again, part of being part of our program is to ensure we make these visible. At the moment, we've got 5,300 members on the Creating Council. It's not good enough just to have them listed over there in alphabetical order. You get what I'm saying? How do we make them come alive? How do we make it as part of the value proposition of being graded is that actually you are made visible through this app that we are talking about. And suddenly now we start to drive those type of activities. Then the last question by, and I've left this for last because I had to think long and hard around it. Oh, sorry, before I go to that one, what's the impact of currency? The clock. The impact of currency. Oh, shit. The impact of currency. Just as a rule of thumb, you don't want to be on a roller coaster of currency because we've got no control over currency. Just a rule of thumb, however, that when the rand is weak, it's good for international markets. When the rand is strong, it should be good for domestic markets. We don't want to profile South Africa as a cheap destination. We want to profile South Africa as a value for money destination. And I think that's the differentiation. Otherwise, if you make yourself cheap, you become a commodity. And it's a race to the bottom as who's the cheapest. But we make it a value for money because we've got things that are unique that no one else has. Last one was around grading and hourly rates that are charged, institution, etc. There's actually a method behind it. I think the first one is to take, it actually comes through, started off in airport hotels, where literally you have a six-hour layover for your next flight, and you just want the room to sleep in for 4 hours, as an example, basically. So, and we've seen now, as an example, others starting to open up next to the Gautrain in Sandton. They've got a market that they serve of about entities that I've got 6 hours to my next flight, 10 hours to my next flight. How do I start to kind of have establishments in that regard? We're not the moral police, but I think we do, as part of our grading criteria, to make sure that there's minimum elements that are kind of coming to it. Business people run their businesses, but obviously there are bylaws and laws that are enforced by the local authorities and the municipalities and also the national police in that regard. I'll put a pin on there and I'll leave it to anyone else.
No, thank you, Chairperson. The CEO answered, I think, a lot of the questions asked, but I'm not sure whether the DG would talk to the issues that were asked by yourself from the last conference as to what were the commitments in terms of the disability and all that, because she was there at the time. Oh, you're not there, but...
But I know about it.
As far as, yeah, and then as an, I attended only this year, and there were issues raised which were nearly similar to those that you raised, but then... They were taken as the way forward in terms of trying to address this particular issue of the facilities and how they accommodate people with disability. But I'm sure because she knows the issue, she'll talk to that. The question that was directed to me was the question by Hai in terms of the usage of facilities that are here, and you find that even if it's for Parliament, you still book your Southern Sun, etc., not using the B&Bs that are, I mean, are run by black-owned people and all those things. I think it's up to Parliament, I'm sure, but also from the executive to emphasize and finalize the policy on the 30% procurement, because it is stating clearly that you must procure from your small business, your people, like your cooperatives and all that, if it's for government purposes, because if we can't just have policy and do the opposite. So it should be, I think, from us to say, how do we emphasize that particular policy? Also talk to Parliament, because if we account to Parliament, but they don't even try, I mean, to deal under this, they still believe in your big hotels, then it means we'll have good policy there, but no one will support it. So that is where we should be able to start that particular process, because in terms of the 9-point plan, it is taken clearly, if you want to revitalize the township, economy or even rural, etc., and all that, then you need them to support those and make sure that in the government's procurement, you make sure that you can give those people then not just talking about it, but then doing it. So to me, it's a quite a critical point that we must see how do we take it forward from this particular industry and then be able to have the SAT and be able to deal with some of the clusters that we participate on, especially the economic cluster. And then the issue on the, there's an interesting one. I think it is raised the tourist guide. I think is Mr. Honorable Mtetwa, that some of the tourist guides don't come from a rural places, and those are places have got a lot to say in terms of some of the tourists would like to go to those areas and know exactly how the people live. The little information that I know from us that we've trained a lot of the tour guides, maybe we have not trained the number more because we've got limited budget. But as far as the KZN in particular is concerned, we went there around about April or March at the area of East Mangaliso. And we visited the Kula village and you know, went through the tourism information center there, the village and other places and all that. That was run by the local young people that we trained that benefited from the Torres Guide training. And we took them from there because they know the place better. And they are able to even explain to the Torres very well. It's young people that are doing very well. So it is only the question that we are not able to train much more. But they are there exactly because I've been there just now in April. And we have seen them that they are doing quite a good job. One deals with the beds, specialized just on bed tourism, and you've got those who come from abroad who just like that, and then he's doing very well. He's very young. He was trained, by the way, we train them free of charge. That's how we use the taxpayers' money very well. We will train them. I mean, free of charge, and they're able to do this. So, if we can get more budget, I'm sure we can be able to train even much more. But the question is that you know that we are under financial constraints. We are told we must do more with less. So that then delays the whole process of trying to make sure that we can get the bulk of the people more number from those places. But where it is done, it is working very well. It is for us then to see how best can we deal with those issues much more. And I think to me, the spirit raised in terms of the challenges like your SAA strike, Mr. Magwewe and Ukhai, it is quite a genuine one. But at the same time, there lies a problem in terms of your democratic processes and also just implementing the basic conditions of employment and the Labor Relations Act. Because to me, there are services that are your essential services, that those should be able to go on. And then if you've got a dispute, arbitration should be waged for it. Because if you stop the services, they then impact on the running of the economy and all that. But one way or the other, these are the, you know, going labor laws and others that we have to always observe and see. Do something about it, because if you don't, then we'll experience a problem. Just today, there's also, I've seen on the morning news, the crew is also again picketing. That they are today. They're picketing, they're saying they're not happy with what they're given and all those. So if the issue is not attended on time, but it was the trade union that was there to represent them, talking about this, if it's not attended to, we may have the second bout of what happened, but it was not good, I mean, for everything to just stop and all that. But that came then as also, I'm not encouraging it, but other airlines made a lot of money. British Airways and all of those that, I mean, they made a killing because people had to resort then to them. But as you know, there are places where these airlines cannot go, where SAA goes, and you cannot then play in the hands of the people and don't want to do what it is expected to do. There should be some way of how we deal with some of those particular institutions because they provide such a good service. I mean, we've just now, they've resolved this thing of the pathologist and whatever. I mean, some of the things, I mean...
Sorry, dear. We have colleagues there from the select committee who's coming for a meeting at 12 with us. And I'm worried from the Select Committee on Finance.
Okay. No, thanks.
I think it's them, but I can see they're getting anxious.
Let me give to the DDG. Then I'm.
No, the DDG and I will take it up.
Oh, thank you.
We will find a way to take it up. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, CEO, Deputy Chair of the Board, the staff. Thank you very much for the presentation and for the engagement that we've had with you. We value it very much. You can disappear quietly while I'm just going to deal with one issue with the members, which is the minutes of our last meeting. I will ask members that we put aside the other two issues, which is the report and the report back on the oversight preparations, and just look at the minutes of that meeting that was held on the 21st of June. It has been distributed to you. I've gone through it. And can I, because of time constraints, just put the minutes before you.